Okay.
Wow.
Will you be excited about that?
I've been doing it for the last 2 years.
Stand for the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the accounts payable. And we have a cycle date 114 through 118 for $2,931,001.46. Payroll check cycle date 114 through 118. There was some regular payroll checks, some manual checks, and the withholding checks. And the total of all of those for that period 114 through 118 was $863,038.92.
Second.
Items of note.
Yeah, quite a few items to bring to you your attention. We have accounts payable for finishing up 2018, and then some that are from 2019 budget. So the ones from 2018 include some YVRA account true-ups for the airlines, Alaska Airlines true-up of $5,768.42. And I should add that these are for the 2017-2018 flight season. And then also for Delta Airlines, $13,837.73. We have some distributions of end-of-year road levies to the city of Steamboat Springs, Oak Creek, and Yapa. There was not one for the town of Hayden because it had been finalized, paid out 100% last month. And we're going to talk with the treasurer about that.
Yeah, you had that in your log.
Yeah. And then we have a payment. I forgot my list. Have a payment here for Adroit Advocate LLC. This is the treasurer's office attorney that Treasurer Horn had contracted with for last year. This is the final payment for last year. Remember, last week you approved a supplemental budget that would cover this amount. This payment was $29,328.77. And for your information, I looked up in our financial package, software package, and the total payment to Adroit this last year was just a little over $100,000.
So it just keeps creeping. It was 96, and now it's a little over 100.
That's yeah, you know, the 96,000 was the amount needed for the supplemental budget. So there was
$2,000 in the budget.
About $2,000 in the budget, and it's a little extra that she had budget authority for the year. Payment to Chandler Asset Management. This is the also from the Treasurer's Office. This is the firm that manages the county's investments of our treasurer funds or funds in the treasurer accounts. Payment there, $1,522.40. I had a payment to Lawan and Associates. This is the IT budget, and this is professional services for additional configuration of networking equipment for all county facilities, $4,961.25. Payment to Chelshua Corporation. This is YVRA. I've never heard of this firm before, but anyway, we purchased equipment blades and broom bristles for our heavy equipment for our runway cleaning equipment at YVRA. Purchase of $31,336. We had a payment to the City of Steamboat Springs, and this is for the cleft project from the building and plan pool, and then billing through November of 2018, $1,053,947.34. Some of the payments, bigger part of the payment went to Calcon, $1,041,000, and then also payments included to NV5, SAA, Integrity, YDEA, and Atmos Energy. Payment to 3B Enterprises LLC. This is another new vendor name that I didn't recognize. It's Public Works, Road and Bridge, and this is the purchase of salt sand, $13,209.80. Payment to Videotronics, Inc. This is Yampa Valley Regional Airport, and this was upgrades to the security system, the camera, the outdoor camera network at the airport, $34,359. Another large payment that we had from the 2018 was Yampa Valley Regional Airport, and this is for our AIP 44 for replacement for the apron and the gate rehab on the runway side or the taxiway side. This is a pay app number 5. $1,141,415.10, and so far we've paid $3.5 million of the $4.02 million project. And then the last one that I have for 2018 was a payment to from YVRA budget, and this is a replacement of a gate. This was gate number 15, I think Kevin told me. That's one that's right out there next to the ARF building on the backside, the south side of the airport. $11,178. From 2019, we have a payment to the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control. This is an annual cost to Ralph County from Emergency Management Wildfire Budget, and this is payment to the 2019 EFF Fund, Emergency Fire Fund, with the state. Our payment was $20,554. We also had a payment to Correctional Healthcare Management. This is from the Sheriff Detention Facility for Inmate Medical Services, and this is for February 2019, $11,257.54. Payment to CML Security, this is a building and plant, and this is at the Justice Center, and this is an installation and replacement of cameras that are external to the Justice Center right outside the court building out there. This is $35,238.98, so this is a partial payment of the $55,000 contract. We have payment to Mailmasters of Colorado. This is from the Treasurer's Office budget, and this is for postage to mail out the 2019 tax notices, payment of $10,000. We have a payment to Partners Managing General Underwriters. This is from Human Resources, and this is for our stop-loss premium for our medical insurance, $49,271.96. And finally, a payment to USI Insurance Services National. This is for YVRA and our purchase of our aviation liability insurance. And this costs $16,472.
Thank you, Tom. Any further discussion? All in favor of approval of the that thing that we just talked about? Sample, thank you. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. So yesterday we had our work session. We had an update from the county manager, from the county attorney, Public Works, and we had the pleasure of meeting all of that department. Update from the Route County Extension and Planning Commission interviews. No action was taken and no decisions were made.
Madam Chair, I move to approve consent agenda items A and B.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. We are considering the signing of an agreement regarding the provision of professional services with Yampa Valley Funeral Home. Eric, you have the floor.
Literally.
Yeah. That one's up a little higher.
You hit the floor. This came to my attention from the accounting department, interestingly enough, in that audit showed that there was no record of an agreement between the coroner or the county and the provider of the service, who is Mitch Locke, doing business as Yampa Valley Funeral Home. And I don't know how long he's been providing this service, which essentially is cold storage of deceased and transportation to and from autopsies.
Since the coroner was over here.
Okay.
Since the mortuary was over here. That's how long they've been providing cold storage.
And it's $1,500 per month, just a blanket payment, not based on number of trips or anything like that. It's just $1,500 per month, which I'm told is a steal, is a good deal for the county. And again, this just came to my attention in an attempt to close an auditing loop.
Am I to understand that the this money is already part of the coroner's budget? There's no additional expenditure here. Okay.
Am I to understand then that the Yamba Valley Funeral Home would be at risk if there was a large number of these to deal with? Is it, there's no limit?
Correct.
Okay.
Questions from you?
No.
Commissioner Monger? All right.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on an agreement regarding the provision of professional services with Bighorn Investment Company, LLC, doing business as Yamba Valley Funeral Home, to provide cold storage facilities for human remains, transportation of human remains to and from post-mortem examinations as requested by the county attorney.
Second.
So, sorry, I read that wrong. County and coroner.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Multitask.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
So were you?
All right, come on up. We have consideration by the board to approve the purchase of some equipment. Yes, thank you.
So we're here to ask for consideration by the Board of County Commissioners to approve the purchase and authorize the county manager to electronically sign a purchase order for one new 2019 model year lowboy trailer, complete to be used by the Road and Bridge Department at the Steamboat Shop, to Wagner Equipment Company in the amount of $73,109.11. And we went out to bid to 15 suppliers and 7 responded. We had a lower bid, but it did not come with any warranty. Wagner we've dealt with many times, and in the RFP process, you don't need to take the lowest bid. We've had an excellent working relationship with on-site service where they come to the shop. They're there about once a week doing things with the different shops they go to. And so we're recommending the purchase from Wagner. Due to this meets all the specifications of RFP 629. And while not below bid, the equipment comes with a full one-year warranty with on-site service. The proposal from the low bid, Westmark, does not provide a warranty of any kind.
When I was reviewing these bid packets, this lowest bid called my attention. I've never seen a trailer, a lowboy that cheap. So when I went through the warranty, they didn't back up anything of their items. So if a tire failed, you had to go through the tire manufacturer. The frame failed, had to go through the frame manufacturer. Brakes, anything. So not, even the lights, they wouldn't stand behind. So that's why it was so cheap.
So, again, the $17,000 for a year's worth of warranty.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money. I mean, is the trailer a comparable trailer?
Is that
it was a Load King, and is it, you know, same specs?
Basically, it meant some, not all the specs.
Okay, because that's more important to me than the $17,000 warranty. We probably will use $500 of that warranty.
Right.
In 1 year. It'd be different if it was a 5-year warranty, but
right, for a 1-year warranty, that's
pretty expensive. Yeah.
Pretty expensive, yeah. And so,
I mean, it does seem rather odd, just as you say, I mean, the price separation between the low and then everybody else is pretty well gathered together.
We paid $70,000 for a low boy last year. So, like, that doesn't make sense.
So, just to clarify, mm-hmm. it's not just the warranty.
It's not just the warranty,
there are
but
other
also
items,
the
specifications that they give.
Yes,
because honestly, from my perspective, for $17,000, I'd roll the dice.
Yeah, I would too.
Well, it's also not a local company, so it's a better out of California. So, anything that we would go wrong with a... Even after the warranty. Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
So, you know, having Wagner here, and not only because they're local, but, you know, their service is immediate to the shops. And
so what
and they meant everything in this bank.
What brand was this Westmark thing?
I
mean, that's what I wanted to get. I mean, it's odd, interesting.
It's FRD-251.
Yeah, it says here. Yeah. FRD-251.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I mean, Load King.
Not my area.
Load King, I understand. Yeah. Trail King, I've seen. Yeah. Trail King.
We know all of these. Towmaster. We bought a Towmaster. I mean, I know all of these brands. At the FRV.
That's the only way it was identified.
So your perception is that this is a sort of an off-brand, lower quality
product. It's off-brand, and they just kind of piece together from the cheapest parts they can get. That's why they don't stand behind the product. So that's Load King. We know we've had.
And no, those are good over-the-road trailers. Yes.
So, and safe more than anything. And the reason we're replacing this one, this trailer, is because it was just totally unsafe to operate anymore. The hydraulic jacks weren't working right, and that's the last thing you want to drop a piece of equipment. So,
well, given the fact that you're under budget, you'd be having a different conversation than all the budget.
Yeah, anywhere under budget. Okay.
So again, just to clarify and state for the record that the reason we're not taking the lowest bid is because we have concerns about the quality of the equipment that was offered, and as well as the warranty on the on-site
service. And the local supplier.
And the local supplier.
I don't know if you're going to turn this. Yeah.
So what?
Was ready for a motion?
Then I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I don't know. Did Tom have something important?
No,
okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve the purchase and authorize the county manager to electronically sign a purchase order for one new 2019 model year low brake trailer complete to be used by the Road and Bridge Department and the Steamboat Shop to Wagner Equipment Company in the amount of $73,109.11.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
So we have consideration to become a dues-paying member of, what does CCAT stand for?
Counties and commissioners acting together.
Thank you.
So Commissioner Corrigan has attended several of the CCAT meetings in 2018. Afterwards, I noticed that you are part of the board. I did not know that.
I'm no the governing board?
Yeah.
I was, but I'm no longer.
Oh, you? Okay.
Well, hell, let's not pay up then. What's that? What is that?
So,
they changed their structure. So okay. I did not apply for a leadership position.
Okay.
So, according to what I found on their website, they're comprised of counties and individual commissioners across Colorado working to provide a unified, nonpartisan, independent voice at the State House. Collectively, CCAT represents all regions of the state and the diversity of issues facing every corner of Colorado. What I could see, there's about 17 different counties that are participating or have representation in that group. And there is a $75,000 budget that was presented in 2018.
So there's actually been a revised budget. I can get that information to you.
Okay.
I think the new revised budget is $90,000.
Okay.
And that's not including our participation.
Right. So today here I'm asking you to authorize the contribution of $3,000 for 2019. And this contribution will be coming out of your discretionary. And then if you are agreeable and moving forward, we can add this to the 2020 budget as part of our operation budget and dues and memberships.
So I'm fine with where we had, and so I'm fine with the $3,000 out of discretionary money. We kind of all talked about that and the rest. And I versus approving the 2020 budget contribution, we just want you to add it into the discussion item when you come back to us for the 2020 dues and memberships thing. So add it on so that way we can have that evaluation of how they've performed during the year.
Okay. Yeah, because we'll have a pretty good idea by the end of the legislative session how impactful
the value of the membership. Yeah.
Okay. Impressive. All right.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize the contribution of, or the membership of $3,000
from the 2019 Community Services Budget Discretionary Line Item to the counties and commissioners acting together group as our membership fee for 2019. And we will discuss the 2020 budget discussion at budget consideration time later.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Thank
very
you.
Good. Thank you.
I believe we need to wait till at least Kathy waiting here. So nice.
We're on.
You're not out of breath.
I know. So we are
reason for being here.
We're considering the to approve hiring the new accounting manager at step 5 with the opportunity to advance to step 6.
Yes, Dan Sternett is requesting to hire Sean Songkab. Sean, at step 5 with the opportunity to move to step 6. He does meet all the educational requirements to be hired at step 5 and advance to step 6 upon a successful 6 months performance evaluation. He has a BA and an MA and is a certified public accountant. Currently, the job description requires 4 years of school, and the certified public accountant certification is preferred, so he does exceed the education requirements. He has 14 years of relevant work experience, which is 9 years above the minimum requirement, and I recommend he's hired at step 5 with the opportunity to advance to step 6, and the county manager has reviewed this and requested and recommended it be placed on the agenda for your consideration. This position has been budgeted. It is filling an existing position. At step 5, the annual base salary will be $7,454 per month. And at step 6, it will be $7,682 per month.
I have a point of clarification to ask on this. I don't know what this page is in our packet that... Does that come from Dan Sternad?
Yes.
So at the bottom of that, it says that there's a supplemental budget required, but that's not what it said elsewhere, so I don't know. It says a 2019 supplemental budget for $1,615 will need to be prepared.
So really, that was going to be a con. We're not doing that. Not right now. I mean, we're going to have, you know, potentially budget savings, but we don't have a supplemental budget here anyhow.
Well, you said that's for 2018, right? Is that what it says?
This says 2019.
Yes, 19, okay. Yeah,
Sternad did his nickel and dime thing.
I get it.
And come up with pennies of how much extra money he's going to need based on what he had budgeted. And
what he was probably paying the person before versus what he's paying.
Well, that, and we still have this ongoing discussion about temporary help and the rest, and even Mary Sue coming back and working remotely for a bit.
That's
so we don't even have the touch or cusp of
all that's true
of what the 2019.
It's a little bit different than a piece of equipment we're buying that's clearly above budget. It's a little bit of an unknown where the personnel budget is headed for the year.
That's correct.
So that
now we give us room to do a supplemental budget later on in the year.
So we're not thinking that a supplemental budget is required right now because
we have
the overall budget of the department is yet to be seen for the year.
That's correct.
And the other thing is our budgets. Whenever we approve the budget, it's for personnel,
operations,
and capital. So there might still be some savings in there in the personnel in accounting to still make up the thing. So I think in the motion it would be appropriate
to
say
it may
require.
Yep. Yes, that's what I was going to suggest. Of course, we could include that in every motion we ever make.
Yeah.
But would you all prefer that I present this differently or provide different content in the future?
I think it's fine.
I think it's fine, too. I
was a little confused because that was kind of almost buried at the very bottom of all of that, so I don't know what would have been better. But
part of a larger conversation we're having about having supplement when we know that there's going to be, we're going to be exceeding budget, we should be simultaneously approving a supplemental budget resolution, but I think this one falls in that gray area where we just don't really know. So why would we go through the motions of doing a supplemental budget when we're not sure whether or not it's going to be needed? There's pieces of equipment we buy, we know, we're going to have to do that. So
it seems, though, that if that is stated in the documentation that we have here, that it should maybe be addressed in some way. I mean,
we're going to address it by saying a supplemental budget, maybe.
Okay. So, okay.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am. Do you have the clarification that you need on that?
I believe I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve and hire the new accounting manager at step 5 of the pay scale with the opportunity to advance to step 6 upon completion of a successful 6-month performance evaluation, noting this may require a supplemental budget resolution.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Round up.
Well, I'm watching the seconds count down on this clock behind you.
Oh, okay.
I know.
You're facing that way.
Well, this is nice. We can keep track of the time of that, obviously.
What time is it? Absolutely.
For those of us who can't register, you know, the arms and the hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked for it. I needed a digital clock. That's millennials. We just can't read analog clocks. Okay, so we have consideration and appointment of members to the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment.
All right. You want to start off with the BOA? I figure that might be a little easier.
That sounds great.
So basically, it's the one request, and that was from Thorne Clark, you know, for basically an incumbent member to be reappointed. And then two vacancies, one because Tom Fox has resigned.
Absolutely.
And John St. Pierre because of his passing.
And am I correct in understanding that Thorne Clark is an alternate and he's requesting to move to being a regular member?
Yes.
Is that accurate? Okay.
Yeah, because in where that BOA differs from Planning Commission is because we've got districts basically
right.
Planning Commission
right.
And pretty much everything's in at large for the Board of Adjustments. So
yes.
Yeah, there's no problem.
I understand that. Thank you.
And we also have that request for Don Prowant to be moved from an alternate to a regular.
To step up, yes. So those two new seats.
Yep.
And again, at the end of the day, it's totally up to you guys.
Okay.
But yeah, so the two new members would be
both be alternates
on the Board of Adjustment.
Correct.
And Don Pro and Thorne Clark would be.
Did we interview Don?
No, his term is up. So we'd have to.
Okay.
You know, so one of the alternates would assume the remaining term.
Got it.
That Don's on now.
Okay, so we don't need to interview him in order to move him?
And so actually, as far as that goes, okay. I mean, we didn't actually even need to interview Thorne Clark.
No, but it's, you know, it's been direction I've had from the board
when
for
they
years.
Come up, we read.
Because his term was up.
Yeah.
So
his term
Don's
was up.
Term was not up. He's just requesting to be moved.
Yeah, and okay. Also, you know, unless I hear otherwise from the board, any of these runner-ups that don't get it, I keep a library, a list of their letters, so if something comes up in the interim or maybe even next year, I can contact them and say, hey, you want another shot at it? Because we actually had one a few years ago where the board appointed somebody, and it was like 2 or 3 months, and they moved. So then it was close enough, the board said, whatever guy was next on the list, reached out and offered him the job.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
Yeah. So yesterday we did, in fact, for Board of Adjustment, we interviewed Thorne Clark, Steve Dunn, Rahel Abid, Jerry Albers, and Robert Phillips.
That was over last Monday as well as the Monday before.
That's correct. That's correct. And some of these folks that we interviewed had applied for both Planning Commission and Board of Adjustment. And we asked some of these individuals that had just applied for the Planning Commission if they would be willing to serve on the BOA. And if I remember correctly, they all assented that would be fine.
That was my understanding as well.
And I spoke with each one on the phone ahead of time, and that's the impression I got.
Good. Well, so we there were good interviews. They were all very worthy people. And Madam Chair, if you're ready, I'm ready to make a motion for Board of Adjustment.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
So I would move that we reappoint Thorne Clark, as a regular member of the Board of Adjustment, that we move Don Prowant from an alternate member and make him a regular member. And that leaves two spots that need to be filled on the Board of Adjustment. And for those, and they would both be alternates. And so in my motion, I would include Rahel Abid as an alternate and Jerry Albers as an alternate.
Second. You'll be able to get that, Sarah.
I'll work with you on that.
Yeah.
I think Chad wrote it down, too, so I think we're all right. Any further discussion on that? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Planning Commission. The lowdown there is that, with Polly Bear stepping down, that created a vacancy for the city of Steamboat. I don't want to say representative, but that's more or less the, it's evolved from. And, you guys know the list of applicants for that position. The way that staff creates these staff reports is more or less any kind of suggestion or recommendation is just in support of the existing members. I mean, if there's a big reason why, if it's usually absentees, that they should, I will bring it to your attention, but we're always taking that position. So, and the recommended actions, no big surprise, we're just going to tell you, just reappoint who is already there. So,
in the future, we don't want you to do that.
Okay.
We don't want you to put down the recommendations.
Okay.
So we can,
Okay. And I guess the thing that I would add to that, too, is that kind of in support of what you just said, Doug, is I think having some fresh blood on the Planning Commission is a good idea. And I'd like to kind of, and I think I'm going to bring it up when we have our joint meeting with the Planning Commission, that existing members should not simply expect to get reappointed, and they also should not get their feelings hurt if they don't get reappointed. That may not be a measure of any level of dissatisfaction as much as it's probably a good idea to have some new members every once in a while.
And I agree with that further, Chad, too, is that, if we're going to just reappoint them, we really don't even need to bring them in for an interview and the rest, too. So, and most of them we know, but it's nice to have them sit across the table from us and have a good conversation with us. So, anyhow, I think what I'm really saying mostly is just next time you don't need to list anything in recommendations. Just recommendation is to appoint five people, three delegates and two alternates or whatever that is.
You got it.
I would say, though, that if there are performance issues that we need to be aware of, we would want to know about those. We just had a concern about posting
these recommendations publicly. We get to read the minutes every week.
And right. I think that's, by virtue of reading those minutes, it's easy enough, or maybe not easy, but you have the ability to form an opinion.
Absolutely. But
it's, like I said, it's been done this way for a long time, and it's mainly just supporting the Planning Commission.
I think just the concern is making it look like the decision has been made before we've completed the interviews, because this form obviously goes out before those interviews happen.
And that's, I would say, and this comes up every now and then, but there's no staff recommendation in your staff reports, your communication forms, and that's different than most other planning departments. But I've been doing this for a long time. I understand why.
Thank you for that.
We're using the legal term, we wouldn't want to be arbitrary and capricious, but we want to be flexible in our decisions.
Understood. Okay. All right. As far as, we talked about the alternates on BLA.
Yes, thank you.
Right now the alternates on the Planning Commission are Jeff Pettis and Roberta Marshall. They're listed as one and two on our sheet, but they came in at the same time, so there is no seniority one way or the next. As far as that Steamboat position, I did reach out to Rebecca Bessie and just let her know that with all of the applicants, that there are basically three people that live within Steamboat that could meet that criteria there is. And that is Jeff Pettis, Gregory Jaeger, and Brian around. And she said that, you know, she knows each one of those and that she'd be fine in any with anyone you guys choose.
Great.
So, again, we interviewed a number of people yesterday. I would note that Brian Arell and Eric Hall Meyer did not come for interviews yesterday.
Okay.
And I'm ready to make a motion.
I'm ready for your motion.
Madam Chair, for the Planning Commission, I have four nominations today. First, I would like to nominate to have Jeff Pettis moved from as an alternate to become the Steamboat representative. I would like to nominate Brian Kelly to an at-large position. I'd like to nominate to renew Peter Flint as the Yampa representative. And I would like to nominate Gregory Yeager as the alternate, as one of the two alternates.
Second.
And I'm pretty sure that brings us to a full vote of 11. I have a little matrix here. We'll now have 11 members, two of them alternates.
Is there a second?
There was a second.
I did second.
Yeah. Is there any discussion?
Just one other option, that Roberta Marshall, the other alternate, could be moved up to the at-large and Brian Kelly could come in as an alternate. But again, just an option.
Has she requested to do that?
No.
Good.
But typically it's...
Let's just leave the motion the way it is. I think we're good.
Okay. I am fine with the motion the way it is. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye. So,
all right. Thank you very much.
You can pass on to all of them and tell them thank you for...
All right. Agenda item, Wendler vacation of a portion... How do you pronounce the name of this street?
Placer.
Of Placer Street. Thank you.
So, following the Planning Commission meeting on January 3rd, the applicant has decided to reduce what he's asking for. And in that reduction, he needs some additional time to get supporting documents together. So he is requesting that it be tabled for 2 weeks to January 5th.
Okay, so the magic question is that's not even the same application. Why is it going back to Planning
Commission? That was
going to
be my question.
Planning Commission discussed doing a smaller vacation or smaller ask. And they had given him the suggestion when he goes to county commissioners to reduce his request. It's still, you know, it's a portion of the portion that he was requesting, so it's nothing outside of the boundary that he was previously requesting. But they had discussed having it be smaller and wanted him to adjust his request when he goes to you guys. So that's something that they had covered.
Talked about it.
Yeah,
I don't remember. I read the minutes, but I don't remember.
I mean, I guess it feels like it would have been cleaner if they would have tabled it right then and there.
Well, we didn't have that formal request until days later.
So he made the request after the Planning Commission hearing, is
based
what you're
on
saying?
The comments that they made at the hearing. Mainly Troy Ricard.
I mean, I suppose
Troy made the comments. No. Troy made the comments about what? About the reduction in the vacation?
Yeah, then maybe that would be appropriate.
So are we going to get a new application on this thing, or is this going to be garbage?
I'm already a little bit miffed here right now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we don't have a fact packet. Are we going to have a new application that's going to show what the right-of-way is going to be?
Yes. So this is some of the items that we're waiting on is the updated survey, some updated drawings from him. He's submitted a letter. We wanted it to be more specific in his request. So he's getting those documents together in order to have a clean request, but he's his
cleaner.
Cleaner request. But his original request, where he was asking for a portion of Placer and then a portion of 8, he's dramatically reducing that.
amount of area that he's requesting be vacated.
So the request at this time is just to table it, to push back 2 weeks when he's talking to us. And so no, some of these questions could be addressed at that point.
I agree, but I think it's an appropriate discussion that Doug has raised. This was the same question I had.
Okay.
This is where we've kind of gotten ourselves in trouble in the past, where we have something that's passed through a planning commission, comes to the Board of County Commissioners. But even at times when it has passed, and then here at the table of the Board of County Commissioners, we start tinkering with what Planning Commission has already approved, and we end up getting muddled and into these confusing areas where, ideally we would be getting a recommendation from the Planning Commission that we're either going, yep, we agree, or no, we don't agree, and we don't get involved in this amending what the planning. Right. Having said that, I suppose the fact that it's a reduction in scope of what's being asked for, if it was an increase in scope,
then it would have to be readdressed and go back to
those kinds of changes. Yeah. I'd be demanding that it go back.
So. I think since you're tabling this, you shouldn't even discuss it.
So,
We don't have a motion on the floor to table it right now. Well, so it's appropriate for us to discuss.
And I guess the other thing, we're providing direction to staff here. So
yeah.
So if that is still a concern, I think to Tom's point, it could be brought up in 2 weeks when we have that discussion. Is that correct?
Yes, you make sure that, 2 weeks, they better have ducks in a row because go down like a flaming duck. So.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Asking for forgiveness after, editorialize here. I'll leave it at that. Madam Chair, I move that we table the consideration of the Wendler vacation of a portion of Placer Street, PL 18-201, and that it would come back on our agenda in 2 weeks, which is February 5th, 2019.
At 1:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Aye. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. We have the Peak Minor Land Preservation Subdivision. Do we have the applicants in the room?
Yeah.
Come join us.
Afternoon.
How are you?
Hi, Beth Melton.
Paul Sachs.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Paul, nice to see you. Yeah. Walter, how are we doing there, sir?
I was asking for it to be tabled. So.
All right, we'll take Alan's staff report.
Okay, so this is an application for a minor land preservation subdivision. Just a little bit about process. Land preservation subdivisions are broken into major and minor. Minor is four or less. Major is more than four. And minor land LPSs do not go to Planning Commission. They go straight to the board. So there's no recommendation from Planning Commission, and therefore no minutes. And so this is the site right here, outlined in red. County Road 44 runs through the middle of it. Highway 40 is to the south, about three quarters of a mile. And so, and the application is to split it along County Road 44. So lot one would be the west side of County Road 44. The lot two would be the east side. Lot one, the west side, is proposed to be 70.99 acres. Lot two, the east side, is proposed to be 24.18 acres. And then just some pictures of the structures that are existing on site. This structure in the bottom left is a residence that is being lived in. This is another house that is on the property, but it hasn't been lived in for a number of years, and based on my...
Like 30 years.
And it... My observation was that it did not look inhabitable. Here are some of the agricultural structures that are on the east side of the road. These are the structures that are on the west side of the road. This structure in back is the mobile home trailer that was placed there in early to mid-80s. This is an old schoolhouse, and then another structure. Both of these structures are within the setback for County Road 44, but they have been in existence since prior to 1972, so they are considered legal non-conforming structures.
They were probably there before the road was there.
Okay. All right. And then this is the proposed plat. You can see the layout of Lot 1 on the west side of the road, Lot 2 on the east side of the road, with the right-of-way for County Road 44 being dedicated to the county. And then this is a slope analysis map. So all of the red areas are 30% or greater. The orange areas... orange areas are 15 to 30% slopes. And then going back to the aerial, so here, this is the West Fork of the Elk River that flows through the property. Everything to the south of it is FEMA mapped floodplain, so areas that would not be developable. And then there's also water body setbacks that are associated with the river right there. I just showed you the slope analysis, and that is this area right here slopes over 30%, so would not be considered developable. There is the map skyline area does come down on top of this ridge as well.
That's in the skyline area?
It's mapped, but it's outside of the
applicability
area.
Outside of the, yeah.
But the LPS standards do take into consideration scenic values and things of that sort. So it was analyzed by staff. Then if we, so there is a building envelope that is proposed around these existing structures, and then it does extend a little bit further to the north. Going back to the plat, you can see that area right here. And so...
So the building envelope area has... never mind, go ahead and finish up the last question.
Okay. So the total acreage of the property as it exists now is 93.1 acres. And if you were to divide that by 35, you would get 2. And since this parcel on the west side of the road is proposed to be 70.99 acres, just on the face of it, you would think, oh, you have 70 acres, you can get 2 35s out of it. But since they're going through this LPS process, and the original acreage would only allow for 2 lots, the resulting subdivision would only allow for 2 lots. So there is a condition of approval requiring a development agreement that will restrict the uses will restrict the development of these 2 lots. One of them being that Lot 1 cannot be further subdivided unless it comes through the county subdivision process. In the staff packet, there's a mention of a cowboy shed. The applicant provided a statement saying that it is being used as a shop to store various pieces of
equipment.
Which
parcel is it on?
It's on the east side of the road.
That's Lot 2, is that?
Lot 2.
Okay.
Lot 2, correct. And the applicant has stated that it's just used as a storage shed and is not being used as a dwelling unit and won't be used as a dwelling
unit. Is that the uninhabitable house that you showed in the picture earlier?
No, that's a separate structure. And then the modular trailer that's on the west side of the road that was placed in the 80s was placed without a building permit. A septic permit was obtained for it, but a building permit was never obtained for it. And if that had come through if they had gotten a building permit or applied for a building permit for it, planning would not have signed off on it, because at that time secondary dwelling units were not allowed. And so that...
You talked about the mobile home?
Yeah.
Yeah, but at that point in time when that was there, they owned another 200 acres. The parcel was 200 acres bigger.
Let's finish that. Let's finish the staff report and then we can discuss.
Then I can argue.
But by doing this subdivision and getting a permit for that structure or removing it, it would be brought into compliance. So I understand what you're saying, Doug, but I don't.
At that point in time, we would have gotten a large lot agreement with them and to have made that unit feasible. Go on.
Yeah, so... but with this subdivision, it would bring that, it would allow for a dwelling unit to be on that parcel, and then, of course, it would need to be brought into compliance by either obtaining a building permit or removing it. And the building department has been made aware of it. A violation letter has been sent out, and the building department was consulted along with the applicant about the time frame for obtaining a building permit or bringing it into compliance in relation to when the plat would be recorded. And so the condition of approval states that let me see.
I think it said within 1 year.
It says, prior to recording the plat, an application shall be submitted to the Raft County Building Department to bring the mobile home into compliance. And that was based on the building department's normal time frame for something like this. And then so it was discussed with the applicant and they agreed to it. And... I think that's it for right now. That is it for right now.
All right. Thank you. We'll take comments from the applicants.
I'm Paul Sachs. I'm the special administrator for the estate of Gary Peek. I brought this forward. I was appointed by the court to try and finish this probate action. I can give you as much or as little history of the action as you want, but the bottom line is that we resolved two cases by agreeing to try and get this done. And that's why I'm processing the application. Alan's been great to work with. All the parties are in agreement that if we do this, they're happy with it. The slightly longer story is Gary Peek died in August of 2017 with a will, and his wife, Claire Wheeler Peek, died in January of 2018 without a will. So there was some contention about Gary's will, which left the 24 acres plus another 11 acres to be determined to the person that's now living there. Since Claire died without a will, her property went to her three nephews, and the three nephews challenged whether or not the will and some of the other transactions were valid. And the bottom line of all that was we agreed the woman living in the east side would get the 24 acres if we could get it done, and that's why we came through this process. And the boys, the nephews, would get the 70 acres on the other side. Not subdividable, as Alan said. So it's kind of an odd minor LPS, since we got 90 acres, but we're still just looking for two lots. We're not adding any additional housing or any additional lots. It's still a two-lot subdivision. It's just the one on the other side is non-conforming because it's only 24 acres, give or take. And I'm happy to answer any other questions.
All right, so we'll take questions from the commissioners at this time, and we'll save comments until after we have the opportunity for public comment.
Oh, and I guess one other thing is John Holloway, who's in the audience, is representing the nephews. So he's here in case there are any questions about that.
Thank you. So questions.
So I have a a couple of questions about the existing buildings. Mm-hmm. So, just so I understand correctly, on lot one, there's an existing residence. And that existing residence is within the setback to the county road, is that correct?
No. So, lot two, right here, lot one.
Okay, so I'm sorry, lot two, I had that wrong backwards. Lot two, the existing residence is within the setback? It is not.
No, the only structures that are within the setback
schoolhouse and
are on lot one, so right there and right there.
Okay.
So the residence is not within the setback.
Correct.
And then the building envelope for lot one is been described in a manner that it will not be within the setback of the county road.
We haven't defined it, but we haven't. That was one of my questions. There is no building envelope defined right now on lot one.
On lot one, there is one proposed. So
where is it? Where on?
Right there.
That it's 3.5 acres. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Was that my understanding from the packet?
Yeah.
And so that building, are there any buildings currently within that building envelope?
The trailer, mobile home's on it.
The mobile home would be on it. Walter, how did you come up with that building envelope? Does it include those existing structures that are in the center?
It does not.
It does not.
So it's basically on the 80-foot setback from the center line of the county road.
Okay.
Okay, so we're assured that there will not be a building permit applied for a residence within the setback of the county road.
Correct.
And there are not currently any structures in that building envelope, is that correct? There are.
The mobile home.
The mobile home is the only structure within there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the way that's situated, the mobile home could go away.
Exactly.
And a new
house, residence.
Elaborate house could go up somewhere in that area that's the building area.
Precisely.
And you'll get a chance here.
Any other questions, clarifications?
So, yeah, just to clarify then, what we may be approving here today is not going to allow for any new construction within the setback of the county road.
Or the property lines,
yes.
And then the second thing is you need to explain the secondary units, what our current regs would be on secondary units.
Okay. So under our current secondary dwelling unit.
So lot by lot.
Yep. Lot one would be eligible for one dwelling unit at any size, and then a secondary dwelling unit, 800 square feet, within 300 feet of the primary unit. And then on lot two, which is less than 35 acres, they're allowed a secondary or a primary unit any size, and then one secondary dwelling unit up to 800 square feet within 200 feet of the primary unit. And so the existing dwelling unit on lot two is less than 800 square feet. So that right now, that is considered the primary dwelling unit since it is the only dwelling unit on the property. But they could apply for another dwelling unit any size as long as it's within 200 feet of that existing dwelling unit.
So the existing unit could become the secondary unit,
correct,
in essence? Okay.
Correct.
As long as it's within 300 feet.
200.
Because it's smaller
than
35.
Okay, I keep getting my lines.
And I would bet that the mobile home's less than 800 square feet, too.
I think so.
But even if it got brought up to building code and the rest.
Other questions or clarifications from the commissioners?
So, yeah, I guess you guys... No, I don't have any questions right now. We'll wait and see what public comment says.
All right. We will open public comment on this item. Is there a comment from them?
Just
will you come on up?
Yeah, come on up. So
we can hear you?
Come on up to the... Yeah.
Just a question. I couldn't hear...
For the record, would you identify yourself?
Pardon me?
For the record, would you identify yourself?
Ross Overgaard, adjacent landowner.
Thank you.
All right. On the building envelope that you say is on lot one, mm-hmm, that includes the mobile home?
It does.
It does. Okay, so the the envelope goes quite a bit to the north then of where the okay, good. Right. That clarifies it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right. Thank you.
So you want a roundtable discussion?
Yes, let's roundtable it.
So let me lead off, since this is my neck of the woods. This is my home stomping grounds. I have a million trips by this house. Worked for Mr. Wheeler before he passed away, and for his daughter and son-in-law. I actually rented most of the pasture adjacent to this place here with the other property.
LaSalle.
Cattle Company, and before LaSalle was even there too. So very familiar with the place, and then the county's very familiar with this operation and location as well, because during the settlement of Mr. Wheeler's estate, Mr. Wheeler sold a whole bunch of his property and left these two parcels and without any direction, and the county's really been working hard, or trying to push a little bit hard here on Mr. Peak as well as his wife, both of them, Clara and Gary, to try and get this situation cleared up with a large lot agreement, which really originally would have been, acceptable, but there's been, back before time, there was three units built on this thing when the ranch was 600 acres, so. And then since then, you're absolutely right, the original house has not been habitated for at least 35 years. I mean, and it was uninhabitable at that point in time when people were living in it. So the floors were like this. So it's a dozer for sure. I mean, I don't know how anything. So the county is, in my mind, the county is very supportive of this. And again, especially with the rules and the way this is happening now. And I'm sorry I had to help have a lawsuit between the parties to get the thing cleared up. I think it takes something off of our table on enforcement and the rest, because it cleans up an issue out there that we've had out there for quite some time. I'm very comfortable with the process as well. I'm comfortable with the way it fits in within our county regulations, allowing a main unit and a secondary unit on both of the two parcels. So I think it's really good. I think in that one thing I was questioning here, though, if the county changes its rules, the development agreement that we're going to have on both of these parcels, who's the development agreement going to be with? Are we going to have a development agreement with the estate at this point in time? Who's the development agreement going to be with if the subsequent owner is going to be the person on the 20 acres and then the other person, the development agreement is going to be... So we want the development agreement to cover both parcels. And so I just want to make sure that we have that recorded in some type of, so that we don't come back and say, well, I wasn't part of the agreement. We don't. So, Paul, I'll ask you that.
Yeah, my understanding would be the development agreement would be with the estate. After we get it all recorded, I will, as the special administrator, deed the parcel to Molly Ray and the other parcel to the nephews, and they'll be subject to the development agreement. That's the process.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Because, again, I'm really pleased to see this moving forward and the rest. Actually, I hope that the schoolhouse and the teacherage get saved through all that whole process. I don't have a problem with it being, again, those that were probably there before the county road got reconstructed. The county road got reconstructed probably, 1920 or 30, somewhere in there. And you have a date?
I don't have a date. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So anyhow, I would be supportive of this, and I think staff's done a good job, and I think I'm really happy with the way the minor land subdivision process worked in this situation. We still end up having two parcels, but if we'd had to split the two parcels, we'd have had them one part of one parcel being on the other side of the road, and that doesn't do anybody any good. So it fits the process, and I'll leave it at that. So I'm very supportive.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I have another question that I just thought of. So the ability to build these secondary units that currently exists under our regulations. If a future board decided to remove the ability for secondary residences, would their right to build a secondary unit be vested by virtue of this approval?
Typically, the way we handle that is the agreement is the document that we go that we look to for development potential and development rights. So, if it's written into the agreement, then the regulations change, we would go back to the agreement and enforce the agreement, not the regulations that were in place at the time that the question arose.
So, the other way, vice versa, works as well. So if we have this agreement and we downsize,
and we eliminated the ability to have secondary units.
No, I'm talking about the other way. Yes. Let's say we increase the ability to have secondary units, or change the rules, or you could add two more units instead of one more unit.
They're going to be subject to this development agreement.
We're going to be subject to this development agreement. And the reason why we're asking for that to happen is because streamline the process for this whole thing to happen, and so part of that streamlining is the not to be able to change it if we change the rules at a later point in time, in my mind.
Okay. I actually do mind if I interject one more question before you make
your comment. You're a chairperson.
Thank you. I'm being polite. I didn't fully understand why the fence was not required. I understand that you don't believe the fence is required, but could you explain that a little further?
So the LPS standards are, I think that standard was in response to more of like the Marabous or the Alpine Mountain Ranches, where there's going to be additional residential pressures on those areas, and to separate the residential uses from the agricultural uses. Since it's existing, and according to the applicant, the grazing land is marginal at best, that there wouldn't be, and since there is already a residence on the property, the pressures on the ag operation wouldn't be any impacts to the ag operation because everything was already existing. So based on the existing conditions and the anticipation that there wouldn't be impacts on the ag operation, staff did not feel that was an appropriate requirement.
And we can waive that requirement in this case? That's allowable? Okay, thank you. You have the floor.
I have no more questions.
I'll make a motion when you get ready to.
Okay, I'll let you do the motion.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead. Make my comments real quick. Other than the history, I would echo Commissioner Mongo's comments. This strikes me as a common sense solution. We're ending up with just two residential sites. We're not increasing any density. It's curing a problem. It's cleaning something up. I think it complies with certainly the intention of our master plan and our zoning regulations, so I'm comfortable supporting this.
I would agree. I think that the intent of this makes sense. I was not clear that the 3.5-acre building envelope was guaranteed in some way in this agreement. I don't know if that should be a condition or if there's... How would we typically guarantee that there's not building occurring outside of that 3.5-acre envelope within this agreement?
It'll show up on the plat.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it does not need to be in this agreement, in your opinions?
Well, do you mean the agreement or as a condition of approval?
As a condition of approval, I apologize.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like there's an agreement that the building envelope is going to be on there. So
I think it's going to be hit on a condition 6 too. The development agreement defines the development
on restrictions on both of the lots shall be entered to, and such agreement shall be recorded with the plat. So
okay.
I think we're going to
get
a second take at it.
And we'll ensure
these guys know exactly.
Okay. And you'll be signing that.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify.
It's fine. It's a good question.
Yeah. Still learning the whole process.
Absolutely.
So
no, it's a great question.
I have a question or
yes.
clarification. So did the board want the development agreement to include today's secondary dwelling unit standards, or just leave it open to the standards in place at the time building permits requested? So do you want it locked in?
Or I think we ought to lock it into what's in place right now.
I agree.
That's the incentive of us going through the minor land preservation subdivision thing.
Okay, we'll include that in the draft.
And in essence, it protects both parties. It protects them. They know that they have the right to do it. It protects us. We know that there won't be more in the future.
Thank you
okay.
for that.
You guys good with that, Alan and Russ? You understand?
Yeah.
And that'll be on a plat note.
In the development
agreement. In the development agreement.
Which gets recorded with the plat.
Okay.
Are you ready then?
I am ready for a
Madam
motion.
Chair.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, regarding the Pink Minor Land Preservation Subdivision PL 18-208, I move that we approve that application with the conditions. Approve the findings that the proposal with the following conditions complies with the applicable guidelines of the Ralph County Zoning Regulations, Sections 2 and 5 of the Subdivision Regulations, and applicable guidelines of the Ralph County Master Plan. Finding 2 is that subdivision exemption, as proposed, is not within the spirit and intent of the Ralph County Subdivision Regulations or the state subdivision statute, and therefore may be exempted from the application of the county's subdivision regulations. This approval is granted conditional on the following conditions: general conditions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, as listed in our board packet.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.